Hey there, Admissionado listeners, and welcome to another episode of the League of Extraordinary Applicants, the podcast where we chat about what it takes to create a winning application in today's super competitive landscape. I'm Stephen Black.
And I'm Cleo Handler. We're your official tour guides for this insider's journey. Each week, we tackle a specific topic, giving insight into each of our Ivy League experiences and the applications that got us there. Stephen, why don't you start us off by telling everyone where you went to college?
So I went to Harvard. I graduated in 2007. My major was visual and environmental studies with a focus on film theory. Cleo, you went to some hippie-ish liberal arts school, right?
Oh, yeah, totally. I went to Yale, and I double majored in theater studies and psychology. So, yeah, real lightweight hippie stuff. I graduated in 2012.
Nice. Okay. By this point, Cleo and I have dug into each part of the application, covering essays, letters of recommendation, and last week we talked about all the nitty-gritty stuff in between. But there's one more important area to be covered.
That is financial aid. We know this isn't a fun topic, especially, but it's massively important. Each year, millions of students depend on financial aid in order to fund their education. And without it, the dream of a four-year education would be out of reach for many.
Yep, true story. So listen up, Admissionado friends. We're going to drop some knowledge on you here. Get your pen and take notes because this is some dense stuff.
But that doesn't mean that we can't make it fun, right?
I mean, it's a tall order, but we'll do our best. We are the two most super entertaining podcast hosts out there, so.
All right, so get ready, guys. Let's start off by defining some terms you'll definitely run into during this whole financial aid process.
All right, so the first term, this is something you've probably heard a lot. And you might even think it's its own word, but it is actually an acronym, and that's FAFSA. It stands for Free Application for Federal Student Aid. You know, this is the most common resource for U.S. citizens to use in order to access money for college. It's an online form that you fill out and you submit it after your applications. It's due about, you know, usually by in the March 1st area or earlier, but the dates vary by what state you live in and what schools you're applying to.
Right. And just to note, international students can't apply for this unless they are eligible non-citizens, quote unquote, of which there are few. Basically, you need to have a social security number.
Yeah, you need to be like a resident of a U.S. territory like Puerto Rico or something like that. And I mean, there's, you know, not many international students qualify. So for all intents and purposes, the FAFSA is pretty much for U.S. citizens, and let's talk about the kind of aid that you can get from it.
Okay, so the first thing is called the Pell Grant. You may have heard of this. It's up to $5,645 for low-income students who need it. You don't have to pay it back. It is a grant or a gift.
Yeah, we'll define a few of these terms coming up, like grants, loans, and stuff, but let's get through what's on the FAFSA. The second kind of loan, and this is one of the more common ones, is called a Stafford loan. This is up to $8,500 a year for those with demonstrated financial need. And basically, the good thing about this this loan is, you know, when you have a loan, there's interest rate, but the government will actually pay the interest rate while you are in college. But as soon as you graduate, you take it over. So the interest won't essentially accrue while you're studying.
Right. And then we have a Perkins loan. Again, it's a loan, so it's money that is lent by the school to students with financial need, and there is a fixed interest rate of 5%.
Yep. And the last kind of aid that you might hope to get from the FAFSA, this is just general sort of federal aid, is federal work study. And your wage, you know, what you get paid is determined by your financial need. So if you need a certain amount of money to exist, then they'll pay that sort of wage as long as you work at or for the university that you're attending. And ho the hope is that you can even work in a department that's related to your interests. And the way the money is paid here, I mean, you don't have to pay it back. It's you getting paid for doing a job. It's the government pays half your salary and the university pays the other, but you get to receive all of that money.
Right, and usually those salaries are pretty generous. Like the minimum wage at a college is usually higher than just in the world at large. So it's usually a pretty good deal.
Yeah, for sure.
The next thing that we want to talk about is another option called the CSS or the Financial Aid Profile. And this stands for College Scholarship Service, CSS. It is an in-depth financial profile of your family that you and your parents fill out and then you submit it to colleges. It's required by many schools and run by the College Board, the people who do the SAT and all of that.
Yeah, and this the CSS has been around for a while, and if you're a US citizen and you need financial aid, chances are you will fill out the FAFSA and the CSS. And when you fill out the CSS, you're basically giving schools this comprehensive view of your family's financial situation so that they can determine what your true need for financial aid is. And the money usually from the CSS, the money usually comes from the schools themselves. There are about 600, and they're the biggest names universities in the US, 600 that participate, and also some scholarship programs through the CSS.
And usually students who are applying early will use the CSS because the FAFSA doesn't come out until January 1st. But then you'll also have to fill out the FAFSA after you apply, and your financial aid awards, which you hear about in April, will be based on both of them.
Man, that is a lot of info so far. So
Yes.
let's take a breath here because we just blazed right through two of the biggest things in financial aid, the FAFSA and the CSS. So those are terms you'll be hearing a lot, and those are some forms you'll be filling out for sure. And
Yeah.
the next definition that we want to talk about is we want to talk about the difference between federal and versus state aid. And a lot of this can be determined by the CSS and the FAFSA, but let's just differentiate the two. So federal money, as per the FAFSA, is available to every US citizen, but state aid varies from state to state. And what you have to do in order to get state-specific aid usually is contact the state agency that deals with this in your own state.
Right. And the agency has a name that, has the name of the state in it. So it could be something like the California College Student Aid Commission or the Student Assistance Commission, Finance Commission, Department of Higher Education, something like that. And the state aid can also come directly from your university if it's a public school and affiliated with the state. If it's a UC school or the University of Michigan, something like that.
And if this state aid comes from the school and is based on need, chances are the school will decide how much money you deserve, and they'll decide this after checking out your FAFSA and your CSS profile. I mean, that's why those two, the FAFSA and CSS, are so important for US citizens. But if the aid that you get doesn't come from the school, from a different state organization, like a state scholarship grant or loan from the state that you live in, the chances are the state will still review your FAFSA in order to determine your eligibility for need-based money. So that's all for, money that you need based on your financial situation. When we're talking about merit or athletic scholarships that come from the state, those obviously don't take into account your financial profile because you're being essentially given money for, excelling academically or being great at athletics and being recruited by a certain school.
Right. Okay. And the other term that we've thrown around a little bit but haven't explicitly defined is a grant. And like we said, a grant is money that you don't have to pay back. Free money. Woo!
Yay, I love free money.
So you can get the Pell Grant from the FAFSA, but the most generous grants come from top-tier schools themselves, like Harvard, Princeton, and Yale. Smaller-sized grants can come from anywhere, from local groups, private organizations that give a certain demographic or ethnic group money.
Exactly. Yeah, and like Cleo said, it's the top tier schools that usually have that are really paving the way in these generous grant programs, which started maybe about 10, 15 years ago. I mean, when I remember when I was applying, Harvard, Princeton, and Yale were really sort of kicking their grant programs into high gear. Just an example from Harvard, Harvard has a policy where if your combined total family income is under $80,000, that means that the amount of money that your family makes in a year is under $80,000. This is for domestic and international students who are applying. You can basically attend Harvard tuition free. So in other words, Harvard will give you a grant with an estimated value, like a 4-year value of over $200,000. And that covers everything from tuition to room and board. And there are very similar situations like this at Princeton and Yale. I mean, grants like this are the king of It's the king of financial aid for sure. And all admitted students to Harvard who qualify, meaning their family income is less than $80,000, will automatically get this grant. So it's really an excellent way for people who are in tougher economic situations to cover the cost of college completely.
Right. And Yale is incredibly generous on that front too. I remember hearing about like winter coat funds and things like that when I was applying. If you really are struggling financially and you're going to be maybe you're from somewhere else in the country and you'll be coming to the East Coast for the first time and literally have to get a new wardrobe, like they even support things like that. So I remember when I was at school and I would hear about things like Yale losing some of its endowment and people are like complaining like, oh, poor Yale loses a few million dollars. But it's a huge deal because that money goes to financial aid that is really necessary for a lot of students. So they're
Yeah,
very, very generous.
I mean, you're totally right. That happens each year. These schools are dealing these the best schools like Harvard and Yale are dealing with multi-billion dollar endowments. And yeah, so when they lose some money on their endowment, it can have an effect. And but for the most part, this is an area where Cleo and I won't be competitive because both Harvard and Yale are schools that really take care of kids in the financial way. I mean, we can definitely get competitive about other things, like the fact that, I mean, people from Yale tend to be a bit more dramatic. I mean,
What?
just listening to Cleo, you can probably tell that. But this is not something we're going to debate. Harvard and Yale are awesome in the financial arena.
Dramatic, passionate. Anyway, let's move on. The next thing we want to talk about is scholarships. So Stevens mentioned these a little bit before, but basically they can be merit-based or athletic or private. It's essentially the same thing as a grant, free money, woo!
Yay
But
again.
given out on a more individual basis. So, you get this scholarship, you qualify for it, you're chosen for it. A school could award it to you if they're recruiting you for athletic reasons.
I mean, even though, real quick here, the Ivy League doesn't do this anymore. So if you get
Right.
recruited to Harvard or Yale for football or something like that, you will not get an academic scholarship. You will still qualify for need-based scholarships, but the Ivy League has gotten rid of academic scholarships. I mean,
Right.
athletic scholarships.
Athletic, yeah.
I mean,
But you could also get.
aren't we known as the best athletes anyway from the Ivy
Right. So why would we even need to give anyone that
League?
incentive? They just want to
Exactly.
come. You could also get scholarships from state, community, private organizations. The point to remember here is that you have to go searching for scholarships. You have to research the ones that are available, apply on your own. Except for athletics, scholarships for the most part don't come to you. You have to, oh, and also except for things like national merit and things that,
Right,
like,
right.
you take a school standardized test and if you qualify, you are eligible, that sort of thing. But still, you have to write an essay. You have to, like, go through some steps on your own to qualify for these things.
Yeah, whereas, I mean, grants sort of come from, grants are the free money that kind of comes from, you're filling out your FAFSA, your CSS, or from a school itself. Scholarships are something that on average, for the most part, like Cleo said, except for athletics, and something like national merit, that scholarships are something that you've got to put the time and the effort into seeking out and usually applying for. or things like that. So. Let's move on to loans. Let's get out of the realm of free money. So loans, they can come from the government, the federal or state government. They can come from the school itself, or they can be private loans. So, I mean, I'm sure you guys all know, you know, that a loan is money given to you that you have to pay back with interest, right? But see, the world of student loans is a lot trickier than that. You've got the federal ones that we talked about, Stafford and Perkins, and ones directly from school that you're attending, which are often subsidized by the government.
Right. But you also have loans from private organizations and unsubsidized school loans. These are available to, you know, mostly everyone, regardless of financial situation, but you've got to be careful. Unlike the Stafford loans, the interest is going to start adding up even when you're in college. So the size of the loan will be greater for federal unsubsidized loans. You can get up to $12,500 per year, but the risk is also bigger.
Yeah, I mean, of course, that sounds like a lot of money, but like Cleo said, you're taking on a bigger risk. And sometimes, unfortunately, what happens is students, lower income students, find themselves halfway through college. They're already in tremendous debt on a loan that, you know, is accruing interest since they started freshman year, and that they start to become unable to afford tuition, let alone, you know, the hefty sum they already owe for their loan. So, you know, we're going to give you a couple morals of the story along the way here. But so, you know, the first one here with loans is, be careful when you're shopping for loans and considering them. Pay attention to what the interest rate is, and you should know when it goes into effect.
Okay, so the next thing that we want to talk about is work study. We discussed the definition above, but there's a little more information here. There are also non-federal work study programs where you work for or at your university, and they pay you wages. So depending on the school and the availability, foreign students qualify for this. It's a great way to help shoulder some of the cost of school, and you might find yourself in a job that you love, working for a department you're already involved in, math, bio, computer science, whatever it may be. It can be a really cool thing for students.
Yeah, and the important thing that Cleo said here is that foreign students usually qualify for this type of aid, you know, when it comes from a school. I know one of my best friends from college was from Malaysia, and he came from a, you know, not a wealthy family, and the way he financed his education was, first he was getting a scholarship from the Malaysian government that they, you know, give to like the top 7 students in the country who want to go to school in the US or the UK. So that was part of it, but he was also in a work study. And he was, like Cleo mentioned this before, like the salaries and work studies are often way, way better than minimum wage, you know, salaries. So he was working as like a computer support tech. And I believe he started off at like $20 an hour. And, you know, by he had worked there for a while. And I think by the end, he was making something like $40 an hour or something like that, because I mean, he was doing such great work, and that was a huge, you know, weight off of his financial burden, meaning he'd had to take out less private loans that he would have to pay back later. So work study is really something that can be extremely valuable, not only for U.S. citizens, but for foreign students as well.
Right. So next, I think we want to talk about the difference between need-based and merit-based aid. We can play a bit of a game here. Who gets the money?
Yeah, I mean, this is an exciting game with an answer that might not be so exciting, but let's dig into it first. Let's first define what need-based financial aid is. And you might have already gotten a sense of this from what we've been talking about. So need-based financial aid is given to people who need it, obviously, you know, ones that can't afford to go to college unless they get aid. And for most students who qualify, need-based will be a mixture of grants, loans, and also work study.
Right. And merit-based, like we said, is awarded based on your performance in a certain arena, and it doesn't take into account whether you need it or not. Merit-based aid comes in many forms. There are athletic scholarships, academic or test performance scholarships, you know, like national merit, merit-based grants from the school you're attending. Hey, you did great in high school, and in order to entice you to come to our university, we're going to offer you some money.
Yeah,
That sort of thing.
that's a popular option. It's a way to bring people to your school, bring high achieving people to your school, and doesn't get. But again, Cleo is talking about merit based, so it doesn't take into account your financial situation.
Right. And the last kind of merit based aid that we want to talk about is awards from funds, outside funds.
So yeah, funds are, they're less common, and they often depend on, you know, your demographic or your ethnic or religious backgrounds. Here's, you know, the types of awards from funds are, you know, like scholarships for women from certain areas or backgrounds or ethnicities who are going into certain fields. There could be something like the Lubbock County, Texas Award for Academic Excellence. I mean, I completely made that up. but in theory, things like that really do exist. And then there's things like the Choctaw Nation Scholarship. That one I did not make up. That one is actually real. And it's a merit-based award given to students who are Native American descent and mostly, you know, ones who are in the Choctaw tribe of Oklahoma.
Right. So now that we've covered all of that, we want to get into the debate, which is, you know, are people who need the money getting it the most?
And the upsetting answer here is no. You know, way more merit-based money is being given out rather than need-based money. And most of the time, you know, this merit-based money, it sadly is given to people who might not financially need it.
Right. And the reason why is that, like we said, students want to attract talent and increase their ranking. And it's just a known fact that wealthier people usually have higher to better access, sorry, to better resources, and then can have a higher level of academic performance as a result.
Right. So a school, I mean, like Cleo said, you've got these academic high achievers, and a lot major reason of that might be that they have, you know, access to better, you know, private schools, tutors, things like that, that lower income students don't have. And even though they don't need the money, their families may be quite wealthy, the school will still say, hey, you know, we're offering you this really generous scholarship. So you don't even have to worry about paying for some or all of college. We just really want you to come here.
There was actually a New York Times article on this on September 24th of this year. And there was a kind of startling statistic in it, which said that 20% of students whose families make over $250,000 a year get merit-based aid. The same is true for only 10% families whose income is less than $30,000. So that seems a little bit problematic.
Yeah, I mean, it's startling that you know, people who, you know, the merit-based aid, even though it's merit-based, of course, and people obviously qualify with the merit, but it's upsetting that so much more of that money is going to families who can easily afford tuition. And, you know, the worst thing here also is that studies show that, you know, this kind of financial aid, you know, merit-based or need-based, just financial aid in general, is much more helpful to kids who actually need it. And when somebody whose family doesn't make a lot of money and gets generous aid goes enrolls in college, having this kind of financial aid massively increases their chances to succeed and to finish college. But the problem is those kids aren't getting the money.
Right. And the percentage of wealthier people receiving college degrees has really gone up over the past 30 years. It's gone up pretty dramatically. And the percentage of lower income kids doing the same thing has just barely increased.
Yeah, I think it's something like 3%. It's only gone up in the past like 3 or 4 decades, which is really not good at all. I mean, the possible fix, you know, if there is one, is that schools and institutions really need to allocate more money to need-based rather than merit-based scholarships. The problem here is most institutions are hesitant to do this because they think bringing in those type of students who don't have the same sort of access to resources it won't increase their stats in, you know, the rankings Bible, the US News and World Report. And that's based on student stats like retention and graduation rates, and also student input, like how great was your experience? And you know, if you're a wealthy person who's high achieving and you know, you got a full ride to a state school, you know, you might be more inclined to say, hey, my experience was great, man. It was awesome.
Right. But luckily, even though this is a complicated problem, the Ivy League is really leading the way in trying to, you know, fix this problem, and they're giving a lot of grant money to those who actually need it.
Right. And so again, another moral of the story. The moral of the story here is, you know, if you can't fully afford college, I mean, you've got to do everything in your power to secure both need-based and merit-based aid. Next, we're going to talk about our final topic of the financial aid podcast is we're going to talk about the demise of need-blind admissions. Now, Cleo, can you explain to our audience what need-blind admissions are?
Of course, it really means that when you apply to a certain school, your financial need will not be a factor in deciding whether or not you get accepted. So your financial status is not considered in your application for admission. It is they're unaware of it. It is need blind.
Exactly. I mean, the AdCom is going to evaluate your application on merit and nothing else. Of course, you still need to create a fantastic application.
Right. And unfortunately, this is less common than it used to be. And great schools are getting rid of it every year, like Colgate and Wesleyan.
And, you know, in fairness to these schools, you know, I had one of my cousins just graduated from Wesleyan, and she actually worked, she volunteered in the financial aid office. And, you know, in fairness to these schools, yeah, it's not the greatest thing to get rid of need-blind admissions, because then you're not, you know, being completely fair and equal to everyone who's applying. But the reality is, some of these schools just can't afford to give financial aid to everyone who needs it. I mean, there's only enough money to go around, and that's just the reality. If you keep offering financial aid, but you don't really, as an institution, have money to back that, that's going to put your institution in financial trouble.
Right. So at the moment, there are only six schools that are completely need blind for every single applicant. And these are, like we said, Harvard, Yale, also Princeton, MIT, Dartmouth, and Amherst.
And so there are two that are need blind to US students, but not need blind to international students, and those are Cornell and Georgetown.
Right. But there's also this other category of schools. There are about 45 schools that fall into this that are need blind for US students and, you know, quote unquote, need aware for international students, meaning that they really try to be need blind, but they still have to reserve a certain number of spots for international students who can really afford tuition on their own.
Right. So, I mean,
And
if you're applying from the US to these institutions, it's you're fine in terms of being need blind. If you're applying from, you know, a foreign country, you might have to take into account the fact that, hey, this school might not be able to meet my financial aid needs.
right. And some of those schools are, you know, Brown, Columbia, Stanford, UPenn, a lot of smaller liberal arts schools like Williams, Vassar, and also some state universities like UMich and UVA.
And the moral of the story here is, you know, make sure that you know the financial poli you know the policy regarding financial aid for all the schools you're applying to. Meaning, when if you're applying to 10 schools, know which ones are need blind or need blind for U.S. students or need aware for financial students or don't have need blind admissions. Those are all things you need to take into account when you are creating your school list.
Right. And if you have a really strong application and you're considering whether or not to apply to those top tier schools, and you need help financially, go for it because they are need blind. And if you get in, they will take care of you, absolutely. So, you know, you really want to put yourself out there if you think that, you know, they're on your list and admission is a possibility, really, really go for it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, some people, I mean, are intimidated by the fact that that, you know, oh, it's applying to Harvard or it's applying to Yale. But if you're a foreign student and you're an excellent standout student who is creating a knockout application, really, you know, do yourself a favor and apply to those need-blind schools, because, you know, if you've got a shot at getting in, that you will not have to worry about financial aid. They will completely take care of you in the form of grants and loans. So you really
Right.
can't let that hold you back from applying.
And one other thing that I want to add is that at these schools that are need blind, but really at any of them that are offering you some sort of financial aid package, it's always worth a try to let them know that another school, maybe a school that you know they consider to be a competitor as a you know a potential university, offered you a better package financially. You might want to let them know that, like, I would really love to attend your school, but you know Harvard just gave me such a good deal, it's hard to resist. That might encourage them to try to see what they can rustle up for you, and they might give you something better as well in order to entice you to come.
Yeah, I mean that's a totally good. It's like, you know, price matching when you go to stores, right? If you bring an ad for to a store that has the price of the same item that the store is selling for cheaper, they'll match that price. I mean, it's the same sort of concept here, is that, you know, once you get your financial aid offers, you can really sort of use the best offers to leverage, you know, what you're going to get from other schools. And just a quick anecdote, you know, about my financial aid experiences with Harvard. You know, it was really, it was truly, the best, you know, kind of financial aid I could have ever received. My brother was in college at the same time, and then was also in med school for the rest of the time that I was in college. And, you know, I come from, you know, a middle class family, and Harvard was extremely generous with grant money first and foremost. You know, this is money that they gave me towards the cost of tuition that they never paid back. And you know the rest I had covered in loans. And the reason the great thing about those loans were that, you know, the interest, it was like staff, it was mostly like a Stafford loan, I believe. And it was you know, the interest wasn't adding up when I was in college. So I was getting grants and I had these loans. And so, you know, it was only 2 or 3 years that I was out of college where I was completely you know, free of the loans, paid them off, and that was really in large part to Harvard's extremely generous financial aid package. And I know stories from that, stories about that from across, you know, these top tier need blind schools. They're really the most generous around, and they're leading the nation. You know, the nation, if only the rest of the nation would follow their financial aid example, because it is really wonderful. And that's coming from someone who experienced it firsthand.
Right. So this is obviously a complicated issue. There's a lot of information that we've just thrown at you, but hopefully you feel like if you're drowning, you're drowning in a pile of money. So we've done it, and hopefully we've cleared a path through all of this and shed some light on an often confusing topic for all of you.
Yeah, I need to just take a deep breath here. That was dense stuff, and I'm physically exhausted. So I think now that we're done, you know, even though, you know, we sort of generated the material for this podcast, I think I'm gonna go listen back to it, just so I can actually understand it a little bit better, because I still don't know if I fully get it.
Yeah, no, I'm on the same page, Stephen. But obviously this will be recorded, so you guys can listen to it as many times as you like. And I really hope that it's helpful for you. And now that we've covered the application itself and the financial aid process, next time we're going to move on to a more exciting territory, and that will be the moment of acceptance.
Yes, exciting indeed. The moment of acceptance, you know, and maybe by then, who knows, my headache from this episode might be gone.
Let's hope so, Stephen. My fingers are crossed.
All right. So next week, we will move away from this dense jungle of a topic, and we'll tackle the ins and outs of the beautiful month of April, between the time you're accepted and the time you make your final decision on where you're going to go to college.
So we want to thank you all for joining us on this episode of the League of Extraordinary Applicants. We hope that our advice helps you get that much closer to achieving application success.
Please don't hesitate to email us with any questions, and we'll make sure to answer as many as we can in future episodes. Hit us up at podcast@admissionado.com.
We're excited to hear from you. Questions, comments, feedback, whatever's on your mind. All right, Stephen, that's all for this week.
Join Cleo and me next time for another installment of the League of Extraordinary Applicants.